It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. There she is. Get up from Mandy, 19 years. Woo!
Sorry. My name is Mandy, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. The gifts of being sober and getting to have a child today at the age of 42 years old is, God is good. Thank God. I'm so grateful to be here. Merry Christmas, everyone. You know, I got introduced to this program when I was 20 years old. Well, I was supposed to start coming at 20. I came right before I turned 21. But let me go back to my childhood. You know, I grew up in a really good home in Lemoore. I have a friend here that grew up with my family, worked for my grandfather. My grandfather had tendencies with drinking, but he was a really good man on my dad's side. And on my mom's side, I had an uncle that drank a little too much and did actually caused some brain trauma just from his consumption. And, in my home, I grew up in a really stable, happy, loving, unconditional, strong family. And as I was growing up, I was happy, did everything the normal child does. I knew every neighbor. I know everybody. I don't know a stranger. I think it got me into trouble later, but typical Portuguese. But I grew up with everyone, and it was a small town Lemoore. I grew up with all the neighborhood kids, and I got older. I babysat all of them. But I always had, my dad could take it or leave it, but of course, he worked for Coors Light. He was a salesman, so we always had Coors. And as the little girl, Daddy'd say, Bubba, go get me a beer. And I'd be like, okay, Daddy. And, Dad had in the man cave like two refrigerators. And not because he drank all that. There was always alcohol in there. But he had friends come over that he grew up with since they were kids. And I remember the first time I ever had my own beer is when I stole it out of my dad's fridge and I drank half of it and it was disgusting. And it was just a Coors Light. No, it was a regular Coors with the yellow cans, the old school yellow. But I remember, and I always share about this because this is when I look back in reflection and realize my addiction, the mindset of an alcoholic is really different from a normal person, because I drank half of it and I thought, oh, I can't do this. This is just gross. But I didn't want to get in trouble by me getting caught pouring it out. Like, I don't know where that thought came from, so I downed it. And then I got rid of the can in the neighbor's trash can. But I still think, my wires were crossed from the get-go. And, but I never got caught with that. My first incident of getting in trouble was my freshman year in high school, where a bunch of us girls decided to get some wine coolers and some beers, not drinking very much. We were all rookies. We didn't know how to drink. We drank like three drinks and we felt good. Mind you, it was SAT weekend, so we didn't have to be to school till like 11, so we drank before SATs. So I'm surprised I graduated, because if I saw my scores from that one freshman year, I'm sure they weren't good. I remember when I started taking the SATs, I started answering them, and then I got distracted by the dots, and then I started making pictures with the dots, so I don't know how those turned out, and I probably don't want to know. Through high school, we all partied. Lemoore, we all go to the Hanford Lemoore games. We always do the football game or the basketball when it's basketball season. But we had I don't know if you guys remember having the party spots when you're in high school. We had one in Lemoore called the Endo, and that was the end of Hanford Armona Road. We had Fiesta Forest. We had Jackson's Tracks. And those were the Kagers. And I never really got in trouble with that. I actually was pretty smart in high school. I would really be sober when I would say I'm going to be sober. But as I got older and decided to get out of high school and go to college, I had been with this guy I was dating. I'm so close to his family. In fact, his niece and nephew are my godkids. But he cheated on me, and so I was just, my ego couldn't take that, so I started partying hard. I broke up with him, and I started partying really hard, and I'd moved to Hanford, and we called Hanford H-Bomb, and we just partied hard. And this is in the mid-90s, I graduated in 95, and that's when I started to get a little bit more, my ego got even bigger, because I I wasn't afraid of anything because I'm Mandy Machado and it's not going to hurt me. And I just remember pushing the envelope. I just remember pushing it more. I remember getting into the harder liquor. And then I remember switching from alcohol to the stuff you smoke. Just the greens. But I didn't think it was that big of a deal because it's from the earth. And that's just the way we do. I could grow it myself. Until one time I smoked some, and I don't know whose it was, but I started, like, I got a little paranoid. Well, I didn't grow everything. And, you know, just other doors were opening, and my courage, so-called, which was my ego, my false ego, was starting to open doors to other doors. And I remember coming to a point where I lived in Hanford, and this guy I rented from was from Lemoore. His name was Ken, and me and him went head-to-head because he knew I was partying. I would really think that I was doing the normal partying, even though I'd get mad at my friends the next day when I saw my light bulbs were getting used for other things, and I'd say, you can't come back, but maybe in a couple weeks. And that was just, I think about that now, and I just think, man, I was just wrapped wrong quickly. And, you know, I remember getting kicked out of there, and I'm not getting kicked out. I stayed, but he was like, at your term, you need to go. And I was like, gladly. So I moved to Visalia, and I had been in a new relationship. And this guy was a nice guy. We were friends first, but we both, on a daily, were starting the day off, you know, with a high. And it just got to a very unhealthy relationship, and my ego was bad. Meaning, if he tried to get a little controlling, and I would say, screw you, and go party, and do whatever I wanted. And it was just really not healthy. And one night, I ended up going to my brother's house in Tulare. He was married, no kids yet. And I was like, I'm going to hang out with my brother. Come on, Naomi, one of my good friends. And I just decided to kick it there, and it was the first night I ever got arrested. I drove home. I was coming from Tulare. Speeding down 10th Avenue. I didn't think I was speeding, maybe a few miles, but I got pulled over, and I have that beautiful picture that they take of you when you're arrested, and right, side, and I look pathetic, but I'm glad I have it, because I want to keep that. So I had to go to the drunk tank that night, and in Kings County back then, I don't think they have it now, because we have a new office, I think, but the drunk tank, I always tell people I thought maybe I did more at my brother's I didn't know about. Because I walked into the drunk tank and there's no toilet, there's a pee hole. And the walls made me feel like I was in the movie Dumbo. Because there's elephants all on the walls and they were like, Dumbo. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to go to sleep. And I was the only one in the drunk tank that night. So they gave me a blanket and then I used toilet paper for my pillows. But I still just thought, I'm not going to tell my parents. I got to be smarter next time. Only drink a little bit. Don't drink as much. Yeah, don't drink and drive, you dummy. And so a few weeks later, my parents, well, before they found out, about 3 weeks after that, there was 20 of us that went to a party in Hanford. It was a house party. And I always mention this because there was two of us that got in trouble that night. I got a minor. And the cops came because I got into a little bit of a fist fight. Not a big one, just I decked a girl. And I took the blame because that's what got the cops. It was a nice neighborhood, and I was like, that's my fault. And then this other kid, I've mentioned this, a lot of people that have been around have heard this. His name was Brandon, and he was so drunk. He threw a softball at the cop car. And I was like, oh, Brandon. And they arrested him, and he's like, he comes from a well-off farming family, and he was like, call my lawyer, and it was really funny at the time. But 4 years later, he ended up blowing his head off in front of his Fresno State fraternity because he graduated from alcohol to other stuff, which usually does happen when we have an addiction problem. But I'll come to that. And so anyways, I got a minor that night, didn't go to jail. Finally, my parents found out through the insurance that I got a DUI. Because the insurance went way up. And I don't know how that happened so quick, but I didn't know anything at the time. And so they pulled my car. I had a nice Mustang I got for my high school graduation. And so I was really trying, meaning I didn't do the heavy stuff anymore. I was just drinking and not driving. Except one night I wanted to go get my boyfriend. And we're at a friend's house out on like 9th and a quarter in Hampford. And I was like, I'm going to go get Anthony. And my friend's like, your parents told me not to let you drive. I said, it's 2 miles. I got this. And she's like, okay. And I don't remember any of this. And I was in Hampford, out in the country, and it was very flooded. And in fact, there was a few counties that night. It was January 3rd, 1997, that had been evacuated, my grandfather included, in the Madera area. And I guess there was a stop sign where I was supposed to stop, and I didn't. And I went flying right through there at 55, 60, and there was a car that hit me going 55, 60. And it sounds really bad what I'm going to tell you, but I do not remember it. So the people that suffered the most was my family. The car completely flipped. It was just a little four-seater sports car. It was my friend's. Completely flipped, spun, and then came to an abrupt halt, which pushed the car in half, and a water well. A water well stopped it. So the crazy thing is the landlord from Hampford happened to be out there at a house out in the country helping the Rennie that he had rented the house to. He didn't know it was me. And the cops came. They were trying to help the other people. They were okay. I mean, they went to the hospital for just for a few hours because I think the driver broke his wrist and then the passenger broke her ankle. But I guess they had covered me at first. And this guy, Ken, goes, she's not dead. And he almost got arrested. And they're like, you got to stay away. We're near this is dangerous. We don't know how bad explosive, any of that stuff, or all the possibilities when it's that, you know, it's an emergency. And so they saw that I wasn't dead. And I was really hurt, you guys. You could see my brain. I busted my head open. My jaw was broke, so it was off. I compound fractured this hand and down to here. I broke this total leg. It was bad. I ripped this leg open and my eye was hanging. And but I was screaming for my mom and dad. And I was mumbling. And they took me to Hampford Community. And I remember my cousin, I go, were you there? Because she's a nurse who ended up in the program 6 years after me. But she goes, no, but I called my friend who's a nurse, and they said, it doesn't look good, Mandy. You lost 6 pints that before they had to airlift me to Fresno Community, or Fresno UMC. They've merged them together now. But it's a hospital of study, and we have doctors, thank God, there from New York working on me, Florida. So they were like telling my mom and dad, she's not going to make it. She has a 5% chance. She's probably not going to make it on the helicopter ride. We're going to try to airlift her and try to get her going. My mom said, bullshit. My mom goes, this is my daughter, and busts out my picture. She goes, you save her. Do not give up on her. And my dad just fell to the floor. And so they ended up airlifting me, and I made it. And then they started on brain surgery, and I had about 12 hours worth of brain surgery. So within a few days, I don't know all the details because I was out of it, I had about 25 hours worth of surgery to fix everything. Well, not fix it, because I had to have surgery to fix the uppers like a year later. But my mouth was wired shut. I got screwed. I know I had screws put in my head. I've cut metal. I don't say that to make fun of me. It's sometimes just to save the sanity when you go through stuff, you get a little crazy and just say silly things. But I'm in acceptance of everything that I did to myself. But I broke myself, and I survived it. And so I was on life support for 17 days, and they thought I broke my neck. But what happened is my head got bigger than the basketball, and my brain swelled. So they had to let it leak back here. But I made it, and so I don't remember. I was in the hospital almost 2 months. They had me at Fresno UMC for a month, then I went to Fresno Community. They're merged together now, but at the time they weren't. And I was in Fresno Community Rehab for like almost another month. And then I remember towards the very end, and I remember pieces, but they had me on this medicine that gives you amnesia. So my mom said when I first woke up from the brain surgery that I remember the wreck, and I just said, I'm sorry. And then I said, fire. But then the medicine they gave me complete amnesia. And so, you know, I would be like, tell me again. And I was kind of like Drew Barrymore on 51st Dates, because every time I fell asleep, I'd wake up and be like, what happened? Where am I? Da, da, da. My poor family. Anyways, they never left the hospital. They had a motorhome up there. And when I made it home, I eventually had to go to court. And because my wreck was January 3rd, 2 or 3 days after they passed that law, any drinking and driving related an accident, basically, even though the drunk driver's only one hurt, went from a misdemeanor to a felon. There's more technical terminology with it. But anyways, I am a striker. So I got a lawyer, and he said, we need to start with that one, because whatever, you're going to get the most time for that. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you're going to probably go to Chowchilla. And I was like, a buck 20, 115, 120, you know, I'm 5'11". Doesn't work. And it was really scary, because I was still in a wheelchair, and I still had a lot of brain injury and a lot of short-term memory. So when you go to Superior Court, you're going to all these pre-trials, and I don't know. I just had a lot of angels and a lot of prayers. And I ended up having the DA stand up for me. No connections. And they, you know, they look at your whole life. And she wished me luck and said, I think you can have a really good shot at this life, but you need to get help. And so I was like, okay. So, of course, I'm paying thousands of dollars besides the lawyer, lots of fines, community service. They gave me county time, so I got to go on house arrest for 6 months. Probation for 5 years, formal 2.5, informal another 2.5. The King's View course, it's like an 18-month or a 4-month. I only had to do the 4-month because I was blind. I knew I wasn't going to drive again. And AA. And so I was like, what is that? I never knew what AA was. You see stuff on comedies, but you don't really know what it is. You think first thing I thought when they said AA was AAA. I don't know why, but I just did. And so when I got my conviction on, I was 20 years old. It was July 9th, and everything started, my anklet came July 16th. I just remember the date, which is so weird because it was so short-term memory, but that's when everything started. But I was going to meetings, and my first meeting was at the church I grew up in. And it was crazy because I go to this meeting, and I still don't think I have a problem. I just got caught up. We've all done it. That's my mind. And I'm still healing, but I remember walking in the meeting, and I won't say names, obviously. It's anonymous, but I see old teachers there that are great. My friend's dad, that I never knew, old mailman. And so I'm like, this is all right. And so small town, they all knew about my wreck, too. So my mom was the one that took me, and it was sweet. But poor mom. They thought I was the sweet daughter taking my mom. And I was like, yeah, no, it's my poor mom is taking this a jacked-up daughter that needs a little help. But life started going. I wasn't drinking. I was, you know, I could have seizures now because of it, because of the metal. And so about a year and a half after my wreck, I was still getting better, and I decided to go back to college. I thought, no, I can do this, because the odds weren't good. They didn't think a lot of stuff I could do because of the, you know, they said I'd never talk again. And we all know that that's just like, that's funny. But they also said I'd never walk again. I'd never open my eyes. And so I'm very stubborn, as most of you guys probably are yourselves. That's one of our characters. We maybe used to use it as a defect. I use it as an asset now because it is a good asset. And I was determined to get an education, even if I had to do one class at a time, which I did. It took me like, I don't know how many years to get my 2 years. But as I started back to school, I started running into old faces, and it was kind of a little bit of a high for me, because those old faces was like, right on, this is cool. And so I ended up picking back up. Nobody knew. I kept it real quiet. That was kind of the high, too. And I didn't pick up with alcohol. I picked up with marijuana. So I smoked it probably 6 times, and someone found out, because small town Hanford, Lemoore, and told my brother, and my family found out. I felt awful, because, I mean, you know, a year and a half after my wreck, also, my dad had a massive heart attack. He would never, ever say it was because of me, but don't think I don't know. I didn't exactly help his heart. You know, he was devastated. And so I thought, okay, maybe I have a problem with marijuana. I'm just a weed eater, and I don't know what's wrong. So I got this girl in the program. Her name was Sharon. And she got sober when she was 19, and I had already been going to the meetings because I was supposed to. So I heard things. So I was like, look, I have a problem. I've been smoking, and I need to stop. And she's like, well, do you want to go to NA? And I go, no, I can't drive. This will be what works. So she's like, okay, let's do some steps. And so we did 1, 2, and 3. And I've always been good with having faith in God and admitting maybe I had a problem. And also realizing I'm not supposed to be doing it anyways. Besides probation, I could have seizures and die. So I thought, okay, but I'll be damned if I could never do step 4. I just didn't want to. I don't know if it was a subconscious. I don't know if it was me trying to hit my bottom. But I ended up picking back up. And when I picked up, you guys, I didn't pick up on the marijuana. I started drinking again. And I'll be damned if I didn't do what the old-timers talked about in the meetings. I picked up right where I left off. I was blacking out within a month. And that lasted for about 6 months to maybe a year, and if that. And I remember even one night thinking, I have a problem, but I'm only going to drink 2 tonight. And if I can only do 2, I'll be good. Then I know I don't have a problem. I'm just young and a little, I'm addicted to partying. So I only had 2 that night. But just like old timers, I had heard somewhere, the next night I got so drunk, I completely blacked out, don't remember anything. And long story short, before anyone told on me this time, I told on myself and I said, I need help. I can't do this. I am completely out of control. I feel suicidal. I'm already feeling homicidal. People are getting on my nerves. And this isn't good. And my parents don't deserve this. So I talk about that. People say, you got to do it for yourself. Well, that's good if you can do that. I couldn't. I'm like Albert. I had to do it for my mom and dad to make me just kind of finally get in there and stay. That guilt was what worked for me, even though they never shamed me. But it was just something that my dad's heartbreaking and my mom's heartbreaking and them almost burying me once. And I know if I would have died, my dad wouldn't have made it. And so I was like, okay. And so I did what I went back to my sponsor and I was like, okay, I need to talk to you. And she's like, yes. And I was like, I've been drinking. She's like, I know. And I was like, why didn't you say something? And she's like, it's not my job, Mandy. I can be here. I can be your cheerleader. I can show you the ropes. I can help you with stuff. But if you want this, you got to be the willing one and you got to stay willing and you got to stay desperate. Don't just get desperate. You got to stay desperate. And that's one of my things. You get desperate and you stay desperate no matter what. And so I did it one day at a time. And my grandfather was very sick at the time. On my mom's side, he had diabetes and he got gangrene. He's old school. You're not moving my foot. He's 88 and he was ready to go home to hit my Nana, his wife. So I took care of him and I was with him the day he died. And I stayed sober. When I wasn't taking care of my papa, I was doing steps. I was calling different women every day. I was reading. It's like that old saying, if she told me to bark like a dog, I'm going to bark like a dog. I was desperate because I really didn't think I could do it. And, you know, I did it. I finally, a year went by and I was like, shit, I've stayed sober a year? And I was just like, I did it. And so not that I'm going to go drink again because I didn't, but I thought, okay, I finally started to have a little bit of faith in me. And so I stayed. I never stopped the program. I've stayed in it. I talk about this because you hear about drinking and drugging, as some would say, is just a symptom. I never understood that. Never. I got it at 8 years. My dad got sick. Been sick for almost 2 years, and they finally realized he had cancer amongst other things. He fought. He beat the cancer, and then one day on July 16th, he dropped dead of an embolism. And that was the hardest thing I've ever gone through, worse than my wreck, because I don't have the memories of that. And I just thought, I got to keep this together because my mom needs me. But I'm going to tell you what, guys, I felt like a newcomer again because the homicidal and at one point the suicidal came into play. And I thought, oh, you cannot. Right when I thought suicide, I felt so selfish for even thinking it. But it goes through your head when you're depressed, you're anxious. Things are unresolved. And So I went back to the basics, like the old timers taught me. I started going to meetings twice a day. And you guys, I haven't drove in 21 years. So when you guys say you can't drive, if you say you can't drive or you can't get to a meeting, I call bullshit. Because when you're desperate and you want to get that fixed, you'll do whatever it takes. So when you want to really get this, you do whatever it takes. And I did whatever it took. And I felt like I knew I had to, because I was afraid if I got suicidal, I was going to get stuck. And those are really hard feelings. You don't want to get stuck there. Because I have buried a few people that did get stuck and they couldn't get out and they took their lives. And that's a reality I have to always have in my mind, because I battled depression. And we found that out when I hit puberty. So it doesn't mean I'm incapable. It just means I got to do a little extra work. But it's so worth it, because now I've been able to help other people, not just in this test, but just accepting yourself, because that's what it comes down to, and loving yourself. Because I went through the whole faith, God, are you real, after my dad died, and gave him the finger, and then doubted him, and then got in fear, everything that you, which is kind of normal, because I went to counseling too. I was going to counseling and meetings two times a day, because I was so scared of myself, and I'm really grateful that I had that. So I stayed sober through it all, and I've managed to get a little over 19 years. And that applause goes to all of you. And I don't say that trying to sound all, like, pretty or whatever. Like, that really goes to you guys. And I used to hear the old-timers say that. And just the longer I stick around, I get it. It's just like they've always been right, the ones that work a good program. You have to do the steps. I've done the steps like 7 times. And I'm going to tell you what, each time I do it, it's different. So I know I have to keep doing them, because it's not the same. I don't know it all. I keep learning more. I've done the traditions. I've broke down the traditions. I'm doing, what's that book called? Step 6 and 7 right now. Drop the Rock. Love Drop the Rock. I'm having to get really humble right now, because I had a few resentments and I was ready, that old school. And I realized too, some of that old school that tries to come back, that fighting, because I used to be a little bit of a fighter a few times, and a couple handfuls. My ego was really big and I was protecting people, and I could have really got in trouble. But when Christmas would come around, I'd always start to have moments, and I was like, what's wrong with me? And I realized it was my dad. I was just missing my dad, and my emotions were just a little bit higher. And so, thank God, you know, I keep coming back. Because if I didn't keep coming back, and if I didn't stay in gratitude, and if I didn't stay in reality, I don't do pills. Now, depression, I do Zoloft once a day, 50 milligrams. Place the chemical my body doesn't produce. But I'm so paranoid that they tried to give me Norco when I had my baby. I said, I don't need anything. I had C-section. They said, you're going to need something. I said, I don't need anything. Give me ibuprofen. I was fine. I'm so paranoid of it, because I've seen people come in on pills. I did the street stuff and the booze first and foremost. But, you know, I just try to stay connected. I have some of the bestest friends in here, and you guys, family. And it's such a good feeling to know that we're not alone. And I don't, that ego, is it because I can... I'm not weak because I can cry or I can have to feel things. I'm stronger because I can walk through it today. You know, one of my best friends, we got to bury her dad, say goodbye to her dad today, and to be able to go through that and stay sober and give back to your family. There's no greater gift. Because without my family, I probably wouldn't want to be here. And I get to be here. And now I get to be a mother. And I end up falling in love with my best friend, my best guy friend, Domingo. You guys know him. They used to call us Mandingo. And I was like, yeah, don't do that. You don't want to know the definition of that in the dictionary. That's all I'm going to say. Anyways, I'm just really grateful to be here. And I love you guys all so very much. Thank you.